Hello, and welcome to the Small Business University audio series. This series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching small business owners how to run profitable companies. Each presentation features a different national speaker or business owner sharing dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. Are you an encore performer? Do others want more of your time and or wish to learn from you? We don't want to be considered the best at what we do. We want to be considered the only person that can do what we do. Encore performers have their own PDA, Performance Development Agenda. It means we are very purposeful in getting better at what we do. The three goals of our PDA are to become a more remarkable performer, to become a more remarkable person, and to help others become more remarkable in their performances and their lives. This presentation will detail the process of becoming an encore performer. Mark Sanborn is no stranger to this series. He's presented several programs, including The Fred Factor, The Ten Commandments of Customer Service, Upgrade, Proven Strategies for Dramatically Increasing Personal Success, and You Don't Have to Have a Title to Be a Leader. Mark is an international speaker, has written 7 books, and has over 1,500 clients worldwide. During this presentation, Mark is going to focus on what he calls the encore effect. Now sit back and relax as you listen to Mark's outstanding presentation.
It's time to start living the life we've imagined. I've always admired that quote by Henry James. But it wasn't until recently that I realized that for many of us, the problem isn't that we're not living the life we imagined, but that we've not imagined a life different than we're living. It's one thing to live an imagined life. It's another to not have an imagination big enough to increase the kind of lives that we lead. And I'm reminded of the phrase we use in our culture about people who are larger than life. And we say sometimes that people who are larger than life are really caricatures of how people should be. But more often than not, people who are larger than life expand our awareness of opportunities, expand our awareness of how we can live. It's quite astounding to follow a speaker like Liz Murray, who, despite the poverty and pain she experienced, is living a life of great imagination, a life of success and significance and service. And her story reminds us that we can live larger lives as well. Tony Campolo, some of you know, is a very successful speaker and pastor, and he's a great storyteller. And his son Bart was once asked if all of Tony's stories were true. Maybe you've wondered that when you heard a speaker, if the story was perhaps embellished a little bit. And Bart said of his father, he said, "Oh, Dad's stories are true, but he just remembers big." You know, just as important as it is to remember big, I think it's important to imagine big. And the way that you and I imagine big, what I'd like you to do with me this afternoon is I'd like you to play what if. Because what if is what enlarges our imagination. What if we were the kind of CEO, the kind of manager, the kind of leader that was so good, built such an innovative and desirable organization that we never had to look for employees. They came to us. In 2006, Google had 1 million applicants and made 5,000 hires. What if we were the kind of communicators that, as coaches of an athletic team, that people would show up to hear us speak, not just our players and fellow coaches, but people in general. And that kind of a communicator and that kind of coach is Pat Summitt, the coach of the championship Lady Vols University of Tennessee basketball team. She packs out a room wherever she appears. And what if you were the kind of pastor that was so good at inspiring and educating that first-time attendees at your church not only came back, but they brought a whole bunch of people with them? And Tommy Barnett, Phoenix First Church, with a weekly attendance of 15,000, by his own admission says that the diversity of the audience is such that the first 3 rows any Sunday morning look like the scenes out of Star Wars. And what if you were a wait person? A wait person that was so good at your job that when people came to eat at the restaurant where you worked, people would say, "Is he or she available?" And if there was no tables in their section, they would wait until a table opened up. My wife and I, at one of our favorite family restaurants, have a wait person like that. Her name is Heather. What if you were the kind of husband, the kind of spouse, the kind of parent that people wanted more of? They didn't just tolerate you or put up with you in short bursts, but they wanted more and more of your time and attention. That would make you an encore parent. You know, Shakespeare said the world is a stage. All the world is a stage. And what I want to suggest to you is that we all appear on different stages. There's the stage of work. There's the stage at home. There's the stage of the community, the stage of the nonprofit, the stage of the church, the synagogue, wherever. We all appear on many different stages. And the metaphor is not that we should be actors pretending to be whom we're not, but that people are depending on us. That people are looking for the kind of performances that will enlarge their lives, that will inspire them, that will solve their problems, will feed their dreams. What if you were the kind of author that every time somebody went in a bookstore, they didn't notice you had a new book, but that you had a new section? That's John Maxwell, our friend. John publishes as frequently as USA Today. I mean, this is a guy who is not only prolific, but writes good stuff. And that's not just gratuitous sucking up. I want you to know that. John and I are friends, and I appreciate very much the work that he does. So here's the question today. Are you an encore performer? Are you an encore leader? Are you an encore parent? There's the stage of the manufacturing floor. There's the stage of the classroom. There's the stage of the call center. There's many different stages represented at these respective audiences across the United States and abroad that are listening today. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to give you about 90 minutes worth of ideas in 30 minutes. This is a very erudite group. And what I want you to do is not just to make notes, not just to try to write down the quotes and the things that I say, but I'd like you to write down the ideas that you'll use after the simulcast is over. What you'll do with the information, because that'll be far more valuable to you than simply the words, will be the actions that you can take. Now, my guess is most of you right now have in your pockets or in your purses a PDA, a personal digital assistant. And it'll make you more efficient. It might help you become more effective. But what I would like to give you today is a different kind of PDA. Because I think every one of us, if we're going to be an encore performer, we need a PDA that is a performance development agenda. A performance development agenda says we're very intentional and purposeful about getting better at what we do. Now, when I talk to clients, whether they are leaders of organizations or individuals, they say to me that they want to reach the next level of success in their business or life. Would you agree with me that's become almost cliche-ish, reaching the next level? It dawned on me that if everybody's aiming for the next level, when you get to the next level, you won't be any further ahead. I'd like you to write down the letters and numbers 2LU, because encore performers aim two levels up. You see, when you aim two levels up, you leapfrog the people who are simply trying to get to the next level. And that's important because Jerry Garcia said, you don't merely want to be considered the best at what you do. You want to be considered the only person who can do what you do. Duke Ellington had a different phrase for it. He called it beyond category. Because there's two things that create an encore performance. The first is that it's different. It's different. Goethe said, the world has so few voices and so many echoes. Would you agree that the mundane, the pedestrian, the common doesn't stand out? It doesn't get our attention. The brain is engaged by the novel, the unique, the different. What is it about your work? What is it about what you do that is different than others who do it? Encore performances are always different, but it's not enough to just be different. The difference must be valued. Those are the two keys to an encore performance, different and valued. You see, sometimes we confuse weird with different. You can be in sales and wear a boa constrictor on a sales call. It will make you different. I doubt it will make you valued. It's about being different and valued. And I want to give you today the three goals for your PDA, for your performance development agenda. Now, I'm going to give you some specifics, but the goals will be what guides you. These are the goals you should design towards. The first is to become a more remarkable performer, to raise your performance two levels up as a leader, as a manager, as a friend, as a colleague. But don't stop there, because your second goal should be not just to become a more remarkable performer, but to become a more remarkable person. See, we sometimes forget that what we do is important, but who we are is critical. We need to be kind of the kind of people who don't just perform better, but become better. Because our performances shape us. When we strive to do better, we become better. But as leaders, the third level is the most important yet. And that is the goal to help others become more remarkable in their performances and their lives. Because that's what leaders do. Leaders grow us. Leaders help us surpass ourselves. Leaders make us better than we thought we were capable of being. So to be a more remarkable performer, to become a more remarkable person, and to help others become more remarkable, that is the goal of the encore leader. We hear a lot about passion in our culture. This past year I was on The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch, and I was a panelist, and lots of people called in, and they talked about their business ideas. And one of the things that Donnie is fond of saying is he's fond of encouraging people by saying, I know you're going to make it. I can hear the passion in your voice. My friend Larry Wingate was on a previous show, and he and I compared notes, and we came up with the same conclusion. As well-intentioned as Donnie Deutsch may be in encouraging others, he's wrong. Passion enough isn't enough. Passion alone won't make you successful. To be a remarkable performer, you need both passion and process. Because you see, having passion without process is like having a gallon of gas without a car. As a matter of fact, if you have fuel but no engine, the fuel will slow you down because now you have to drag it along with you. Passion, in my opinion, is one of the most misunderstood and overrated concepts in our culture today. First of all, let's talk about why it's overrated. It's overrated because we think passion is enough. And as I learned from watching people, and you can often diagnose your success or lack of it, and the success or lack of it in others, when you see that they have passion, but it isn't channeled. It's fuel, but there's no engine. There's no process for them to follow. The second problem we got with passion, and the reason it's misunderstood, is we think passion comes from simply being passionate about what you do. Now, I don't know about you, but there's a whole lot of my day I ain't passionate about. There's a lot of stuff I got to do every day. We got little tiny rat dogs. They're called Toy Fox Terriers. And I love my pups, but I'm not passionate about taking them out at 5:30 in the morning so they can do their business. I'm not an encore performer when it comes to letting the dogs out. But I do it out of duty, obligation, and out of love for my family and for my dogs. And it dawns on me that if passion is derived only from what you do, most of us will live lives largely void of passion. I want to give you the four sources of passion today. The first of the four sources I've alluded to, and that's being passionate about what you do. I'm passionate about communicating, as are all of the speakers who have shared this platform today. Nobody is on stage because it's a job or an opportunity to make an extra buck. We are here because not only is it our profession, but we're passionate about the speaking. But you see, there are some other elements that go into it besides being passionate about the performance. Second thing you can be passionate about is how you do it. Some of you right now got jobs that have been so mundane that you can become passionate about reinventing that job. You can show others in your organization that you can make your job more magnificent than it's ever been before. I was once asked to present a seminar on team building. It was so academic, so abstract. At the time, I was a contract trainer for a seminar company that I hated to give it. And although at the time I wasn't that passionate about team building, I was passionate about giving a better program. And so I started to do research, and I started to write and design. I created a new program that became a book. You see, the point I'm trying to make is that I wasn't passionate about what I did, but I was passionate about how I did it. The third thing you can be passionate about is whom you do it for. You can be passionate about the customer, about the colleague, about the client, about the loved one. You can be passionate and say, even though I may not be excited about my work, I can be excited about the person who will benefit from what I do. And the fourth source of passion that we often overlook is to be passionate about why we do it. You know, Nietzsche's often quoted, but for good reason. You know the quote. Nietzsche said, he or she who has a reason why can bear almost any how. I don't know what your reason why is today for being here, but I know that why is as important as what and how and for whom. And those are the four wells, if you will. Those are the four sources of passion that you can draw from so that more of your day is fueled by passion rather than simply by obligation. Well, if passion is the fuel, what's the process? What's the engine? I'm going to give you today five P's. I love alliteration because it helps us remember. And the first of the five P's to become an encore performer, to give a remarkable performance in anything that you choose to do, the first P is preparation. I believe that most games are won or lost before either team takes the court. I believe most speeches succeed or fail before the speaker gets on the stage. I believe that most days are ruined or made remarkable before you leave the house for work. And preparation is the most overlooked part of success in our culture today. It's amazing how much time and money we will spend to attend an event like this or to create an experience for ourselves, but how little time and attention we spend on preparing. Very often when I speak at conferences, I'll see people in the hallways who have traveled on airline tickets that cost hundreds of dollars and stayed in an expensive hotel, and just before the sessions begin, they're quickly reviewing their program to see what event, what session they're going to attend. No preparation. I love the quote from my friend Joel Weldon in Phoenix, Arizona. Simple, but profound. You prepare for what you love. Do you remember when you first met your wife, your husband? You remember how you prepared for those dates? How much attention you put into the detail and just the right restaurant and the right ambiance, and then you get married, and before you know it, date nights happen at the drop of a hat without any forethought or preparation, and we wonder why they're not remarkable. You prepare for what you love. One of the great pleasures of my career has been getting to know people like Peter Vidmar. You might recognize Peter Vidmar was the captain of the 1984 U.S. Olympic team, the gold medal winning Olympic team. And what I love about Peter Vidmar is, as a speaker, he takes the principles of athleticism and applies them to life. Ladies and gentlemen, leaders, truth is transferable. What's true on the playing field is true at the office, is true in the home, true in the community. The only thing that changes is the application. And when I wrote my book, The Encore Effect, I called Peter and asked for permission to share a story that he tells. You know, I learned from Peter Vidmar that when you are an Olympic athlete, the difference between a medalist and a non-medalist is not that big. Peter says you are probably already practicing 6 or 8 hours a day. You're maximizing the amount of practice that you can put in before the body is physically incapable of any more practice. And I'll never forget the first time I heard him say it. Peter said, we say in gymnastics that the difference between the medalist and the non-medalist is 15 extra minutes on the mat. Not 2 extra hours a day. 15 minutes. The next time you're ready to throw in the towel, give up, go home and say good enough is good enough, I want you to think back to Peter Vidmar. And I want to suggest that they were a gold medal Olympic team because they were willing to invest just a little bit more in the preparation. And that second part is the practice. Preparation is intellectual. Practice is physical. You know, I have found in business the one thing we don't do well is practice. How many of you work at a company where you come in on Monday and your boss says, okay, everybody, practice up because Friday is game day. You get to practice all week and Friday we let the customers in. No. You know what you and I do? It's called practice in play. Practice in play means it needs to be intentional. One of the greatest leverages of your own performance is to stop periodically throughout the day and ask yourself, what have I learned? You know, we can go days or weeks or months without ever using that kind of introspection. Somebody once said, and I think it's true, change never sticks unless we realize why it happened. And I think that practice is about paying attention to what we're learning as we play the game in business and as we play the game in life. I'm going to give you an acronym that I like because when I was a kid, my mom made me take piano lessons. I was 6. She said, for 1 year, I must take lessons. At the end of the year, I could decide whether or not I wanted to continue. Never give a 6-year-old a choice because today I don't play the piano. I didn't follow through. But I learned that the fundamentals of music were the scales. Because if you learn the scales, whether it's a guitar, a piano, clarinet, tuba, it doesn't matter. That's what all music is built on, the scales. Is there a way for you to take your job, regardless what you do today, and learn the scales? I think there is. Here's how it works. SCALES is an acronym that stands for Summarize Critical Activities. That's the first half. SCA, Summarize Critical Activities. What are the critical activities of leadership? That's what you've been listening to today. What are the critical ideas of customer service? They are known. What are the critical activities of supervision, of management, of manufacturing, of engineering? Once you know what those critical activities are, the second part is to learn essential skills. summarize the critical activities and say, to be successful at those activities, what skills must I learn? You see, you got to practice the scales, and you got to practice it a lot. That's the one thing you control. That's a controllable. Malcolm Gladwell, in his new book, Outliers, talks about the 10,000-hour rule. Jeffrey Colvin also talked about it in his book, Talent is Overrated. I spoke about it briefly in my book before either book came out. It's based on the same research. The same research basically said that when they studied musicians, they found that those who were truly experts, the masterful musicians, were those who had invested 10,000 hours of practice. And that could be discouraging, couldn't it? We look at our age, we go, 10,000 hours will be 116 before I have 10,000 hours. So what I suggest is that you take 10 minutes at a time. And that over time, those 10 minutes cumulatively become the 10,000 hours, because there's no substitute for practice. If you're not better at what you're doing in life, it's because you're not practicing the scales. You haven't summarized the key activities or learned the essential skills. Preparation. Practice. And now it's time for performance. When I was 16 years of age, I drove an hour and 30 minutes to Akron, Ohio, where I heard the legendary motivational speaker and author Og Mandino speak. Og, like many of the great speakers and authors in my life, changed my life, because at the end of the speech, as the audience stood and cheered, I realized it was a remarkable performance, because Og had given me ideas to change what I did, to change my actions. And it was many years later when my wife and I, Darla and I, were in New York City for a long weekend. We saw three plays. We saw Rip Torn, the comedic actor in a dramatic role. He was in Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. Provocative. Very powerful play. And at the end, the audience cheered for an encore. And what made that remarkable was that Rip made us think. Then we went and saw Steel Pier. That was a feel-good musical. Lighthearted, and at the end we all stood and we cheered and we applauded for an encore. And what made it remarkable is it made us feel good. And the last play we saw was Whoopi Goldberg in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And it was a kind of a ribald, funny play. And at the end, the audience rose to its feet and cheered for an encore. And what made it remarkable is that Whoopi Goldberg made us laugh. Ladies and gentlemen, all remarkable performances in any stage of life make us act, think, feel good, and laugh. Sometimes all at the same time, sometimes the mix changes. But as you design your performance, the question is, are you making people behave differently because of what you do? Do people feel better because of your performance? Do people think differently because of how you did what you did? And are you able, in the midst of a very trying economy, in very difficult times, are you able to make people laugh? That's what makes a performance remarkable. I've gotten to know a guy named Michael Peterson. If you listen to country music, you know that Michael Peterson is an award-winning songwriter and performer out of Nashville. He and I were on a program together, and when he came out to do his songs, he mentioned he was a fan of my book, The Fred Factor, and I instantly became a fan of his. And he's written some great music, but what's interesting is that Michael, like all encore performers, he's led a very interesting life, and he was a football player in college. He had a scholarship, and when he was moving into the athlete's dorm at the university on his first day, as he was carrying his stereo up the stairwell to his room, he passed a big guy, about 6'4", 315 pounds. Michael said he had to press his body up against the side of the stairwell to let this guy go by. And he was demoralized. Because you see, Michael's a big guy, but he wasn't nearly as big as that guy. And Michael was a lineman. And he figured if the linemen on the team were that big, he didn't have a chance. And he got to his room and he explained his situation to his roommate. He described the person he'd passed in the stairwell, 6'4", 315 pounds. And his roommate said, "Hey, don't worry. He's not a lineman. He's our kicker." Michael said, "Really? Why is that, a guy that big?" And his roommate said, "He's not a lineman because he can't move people." Ladies and gentlemen, great performers move people. They make them think, feel, act, and laugh better. That's what makes a performance remarkable. A different, valued performance that appeals to each of those four elements. And that's the key to a remarkable performance, to be able to move people intellectually and emotionally and behaviorally. The fourth P, or pitfalls. I love the quote from D.L. Moody. D.L. Moody said, "I've never had more problems with another man or woman than I have had with myself." In limited time, let me just tell you that most pitfalls are self-inflicted. There's three kind of pitfalls I want you to think about today. The first are the avoidable. Did you ever go to a meeting and someone was late, and when they got there 10 minutes late, everybody's waiting, they said, "I'm sorry, but traffic was bad." And didn't you want to say, "Traffic was bad for me, that's why I left 10 minutes early"? You see, that's the power of anticipation. Most pitfalls can be avoided through careful preparation and anticipation. The second kind of pitfall can be anticipated, so even if you can't control it, you're ready for it. You're ready for what happens when the electricity goes out. You're ready for what happens when there's a fire alarm in the midst of the sales presentation. You've thought ahead. You've prepared for the contingencies. But the third kind of pitfall, when I wrote the book, I hadn't even thought about it. There's a third kind, the kind you'll never know about until it happens. Was speaking to a Fortune 500 company, and the global leader was in the audience, 400 people in dark suits and white shirts and red ties, and it was a big performance. And that morning, about 2 hours before I went on, while I was shaving, I cut myself. Now, we've all cut ourselves, nicked ourselves shaving. That's not the kind of cut I inflicted. I opened a vein. I was bleeding profusely. You could have tracked me through the hotel from the blood on the carpet. I stuck toilet paper to my face, which was worse because now I had toilet paper that was full of blood stuck to my face. When I removed it, it made me bleed again. It took me almost 2 hours to stop bleeding. I finally was able to deal with this particular problem. I was on stage and I was halfway through my presentation when I felt something running down the side of my face. Now, we've all bled on stage. But never like this. And I looked down and I could see the blood dripping on the stage, and I knew I was bleeding because the woman in the front row was fainting. She was getting woozy from watching me. What do? You do the only thing you can. You admit the pitfall. Because what makes a performance remarkable isn't perfection. It's humanness. Because everybody has had one of those situations, and if we try to deny it or avoid it or cover it up, people think we're inauthentic. It's when we're able to say, "Folks, I've never had this happen before. I hadn't even anticipated it could." And by the time the speech was over, I was able to make a few jokes, and we laughed together at the unavoidable pitfalls of life. You probably heard this before, but I love it. God gave us a sense of humor because he knew there'd be problems we couldn't solve. And sometimes that's how we deal with the pitfalls. So if you've prepared and you've practiced and you've avoided the pitfalls and you've performed remarkably, there's one final thing to do. The last P is to polish. Polish. My friend Tom Winninger lives in Minneapolis. Tom is an entrepreneur and professional speaker. But growing up, he had a speech impediment. He was able to imagine a life greater than his speech impediment. Today, he's a very eloquent speaker. But he used to spend the summers with his grandfather, who was a woodworker, in his shop. He learned a lot from Grandpa, but you see, with his speech impediment, he didn't call him Grandpa, he called him Ampa. And Ampa made fine furniture, and Tom was the furniture finisher. And even though it may not be EPA approved back then, you would use linseed oil, and it was the oil of the hands combining with the linseed oil that would create a remarkable finish on the furniture. And a woman came in, and she had a piano bench that was irreparable, and so Ampa said he would build her a new bench, and he let her pick out the wood. So she was invested in the process, and he built the bench, and he told Tom to polish the bench. And every day, Tom would come in, and he would polish the bench. And one day, he said to Ampa, he said, "Ampa, when should I stop polishing?" The next day, Tom came in, and he found Ampa in the shop, and Ampa had suffered a heart attack and passed. But Tom remembers the wisdom that he had shared the day before when he had asked his Ampa about when to quit polishing the bench. Because Ampa said, "Tom, you keep polishing until the owner comes to take it home. You keep polishing the performance that is your life, that is our life, until the owner comes to take us home." That's the polish. Cavett Robert, the founder of the National Speakers Association, used to say, "School is never out for the professional. School is never out for the encore performer. And all of us are surrounded by encore performances, and sometimes we don't recognize them, but sometimes they hit us with such magnitude and force that we are forever changed. I had that kind of change on November 3rd, 2008. I came home from work, and the scene played out as it does in so many homes. I put my briefcase down, and the phone rang, and I knew from caller ID I should answer because it was my doctor's office, Dr. Ted Eigner. And I'd been waiting to hear from him, and I picked up the phone, and my doctor was in tears. And he said, "Mark, the biopsy's back. You've got prostate cancer. I'm so sorry." I hung up the phone, and you need to understand, the focus of the story isn't on me, because I had come to terms with the fact that I probably was going to have a positive diagnosis. But I turned to my wife, Darla, who had that expectant look in her eye, and I said, "Honey, I do have prostate cancer, but what's remarkable is that Dr. Eigner is as upset as I am. I have never seen that kind of empathy in a healthcare professional that makes a call like that dozens of times a week." And I was reminded that Ted Eigner, even though we haven't become close beer-drinking buddies, we have become friendly, that Ted Eigner is the kind of encore performer, because he's not just passionate about what he does. He doesn't just have the intellect of a surgeon who on December 16th, using a robot, the Da Vinci robot, successfully removed my cancer that was completely contained. But he has the heart of an encore performer in his empathy, not just his skill, not just his intellect, but his empathy, his heart, reminded me that we can do our jobs, the same jobs we do every day for everybody, in such a way that they will not only appreciate what we do, but they will demand more and more of us and of it. Thank you. Godspeed.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each presentation. Please feel free to give us a call with your comments. The Small Business University audio series is produced and distributed by Grandy and Associates. If we can be of service to you, please give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963, or check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com. Until next time, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.